Welcome to When They Popped. Let's rewind to a simpler time together and dive deep into the music, movement, and mania behind our favorite Y2K celebrities and trends. Hosted by Kelsey and Mary, it's time for another episode of When They Popped.
Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
How you doing, Mary?
Oh, I'm doing all right, Kels. How are you?
I, for one, couldn't be happier to be talking about something light and fun and feminist today because obviously the news has been really heavy over the last week or so. So very excited to have this outlet where we can enjoy some fun memories of the late 90s with what I consider to be one of the greatest bands of all time.
Yes. And this is really exciting for me, one, because I know this is kind of like your bread and butter. And so it was a really exciting opportunity for me to kind of revisit and learn more about this super group. And also, I'm just like ready for you to like drop some knowledge on me and teach me some things I might not know. And just before we dive in, we are going to resume our Brittober next week. As I told you last week when we had our incredible Kelly Klinger on, we're celebrating Britney this month, but we're not doing the whole month for the sake of people who might not be the biggest Britney stans or what have you. So try not to go too crazy with it, but we will be back with another incredible guest next week to celebrate our girl Britney.
I don't think there's such a thing as going too crazy for Britney, but what do I know? So let's get right into it, shall we? Because I can't wait a minute longer. So today's episode is dedicated to the group that raised me. Yes, our founding mothers of girl power and the best-selling girl group of all time, the Spice Girls. Can you hear me smiling in how I'm talking? Because I find it impossible to listen to their music and not have this reaction. The Spice Girls were my first concert. They were my first musical obsession. That was really my own taste, you know, like not influenced by my parents or my sister. And what was so special about them is that they taught us all that girls can be multidimensional. We could like pink and stuffed animals like Baby, but also play sports and wear swishy pants and sneakers like Sporty. We could be beautiful and maybe, you know, a little high maintenance like Posh, but also charismatic like Jerry and fierce and spontaneous like Scary. I liked that they taught me that I could be silly and have fun and be smart and successful, because they didn't teach us that we had to choose which parts of ourselves or which interests we were allowed to have as girls. The Spice Girls taught me that you can't put femininity in a box and that our differences make life more interesting. And if anybody didn't believe in girl power, hopefully their 87 million records could do the talking for them. So today we are paying homage to this girl group who has secured an enduring spot on my playlist forever. Also, we didn't plan it this way, but it just so happens that Netflix dropped a documentary about David Beckham's career. It's called Beckham, go figure. And it's fabulous, by the way. I binged the entire thing in one night. And Victoria is obviously heavily involved. Mel C is also interviewed in it. It's a super fun watch. And Posh has this one line. She goes, "I am not into football. I wasn't into football then. I'm not into football now." And it just made me lol because Posh is still poshing all these years later. So this episode was always going to be about Spice Girls. It's just kismet that Posh is back in the headlines, I guess. Mary, do you have a favorite Spice Girl?
I was a baby Spice Girly, but it's kind of interesting because I think I was almost like, I liked the Spice Girls music, but I just never, and it's insane to me that I never like went head over heels into them, kind of like you did, like we did with Backstreet Boys or I did with Britney, you know. Maybe it was because of them being across the pond and I just never got the exposure. So again, Baby Spice was my favorite, but I'm so excited to just like learn more from you. Who was your favorite?
Baby Spice honestly makes sense for me because you love Britney so much, like the pigtails, the blonde, like they have a similar aura in my mind. So that totally tracks. I was a Jerry girl. I was Ginger Spice all the way. I fell in love with her in Spice World because she was always like dropping facts about animals. Like she was talking about how a male jaguar would court the female jaguar by peeing on her. And I like just everything she said made me laugh. My sisters favorite was Baby because her name was Emma too. So she like immediately claimed Baby. So I feel like there wasn't a Kelsey. And to me, Jerry was the closest I could get.
And as always, before we jump into our episode, quick disclaimer that we do not own or claim to own the rights to the songs or performances in this episode. The purpose of these clips is for commentary and critique.
So let's get into it. Our story begins in 1993 with a humble ad in a magazine called The Stage, which begged the question, are you street smart, extrovert, ambitious, and able to sing and dance? Question mark. Well, this group called Heart Management held auditions to create a girl group to compete with the British boy bands that were super popular at the time. So hundreds of girls responded to this ad, and they finally narrowed it down to five girls: Victoria Beckham, Posh Spice, Mel B, Scary Spice, Mel C, Sporty Spice, Jerry Halliwell, Ginger Spice, and Michelle Stevenson. Record scratch. Where the fuck is Baby Spice, you ask? Well, Emma Bunton only joined the group after Michelle dropped out when her mother became ill. So sorry, Michelle, I hope your mom is okay. But that's how we got our Fab Five. But they weren't fully the Spice Girls as we know them just yet, because they were originally called Touch. What the hell?
Oh my God. They pivoted in the right direction. Spice Girls is such a cool name. It really is.
And do you want to know how they got that name, Mary?
Obvi.
So they weren't loving their management, and they actually ended up meeting with other people in the business on the low, including some musicians and writers. And some of these writers, they wrote a song with them called Sugar and Spice. So that song is what inspired them to change their name to Spice. But they found that there was a rapper in the U.S. who was already named Spice, so they went with Spice Girls.
Oh my gosh, that's a really cool story. I didn't know there was a rapper named Spice, like, and just learning so many new things.
Go figure. So in 1995, about a year after being formed as a group, I mentioned they were really not that happy with their management, who was a father-son duo, by the way, they parted ways with Heart Management. And you know what is so freaking badass? Like, they were badass from the very beginning. They stole their masters from the management offices to ensure that they kept full control of their own work. So there's no need for a Spice Girls version or From the Vault here, because before they've even dropped a freaking single, they were teaching us a lesson to know our worth. And if you don't feel like you're being valued, go where you do feel like you're being valued.
I feel like they must have been like fairly young when this was happening as well. So that's like really smart to just have like the wherewithal and know that you needed to do that.
Like the business sense on top of the creative chops. I mean, this ad, they said, are you extroverted? Are you charismatic? They asked for it pretty much. So anyways, they've left Heart Management, but now they need to figure out, you know, their first album. Well, their old management had set up this meeting with a producer named Elliot Kennedy. And this meeting was supposed to take place 1 week after the Spice Girls left their management. So the girls knew they had this amazing meeting set up, but they didn't have any details about where to go. They only knew the town that this guy lived in. I believe it was a town called Sheffield. One of those British sounding,
yes,
Sheffield sounding towns. So the story goes that Mel B and Jerry drove to this producer man's town, found a phone book somewhere, looked up everyone with his name, and just showed up at his door and persuaded him to work with them, even though they had just left their management. So the next day, the rest of the girls joined them. And in this session, Elliot provided the music and the chorus, and the girls helped write. And 10 minutes later, they had a song. It ended up that they wrote four songs in this session for their album, including Say You'll Be There. Step to Me. Strong Enough. Stronger, and Love Thing. And I mean, what? Like, wow. These girls are so headstrong and they know what they want and they're not afraid to go after it. So they wrote and recorded more songs. And one of the producers mentioned them to Simon Fuller. And so they reached out to Simon. They got him signed on as their manager. And then they later signed on with Virgin Records. So now we're cooking with gas, baby. Side note. I saw the name Simon Fuller and I was like, why does that name look so familiar? And it's because he created American Idol. And there was always that, you know, created by Simon Fuller card after the opening credits. But this guy was a legend because he was also responsible for the careers of Annie Lennox. He worked with Madonna to release Holiday. And then later on, he'd go to work with S Club 7 and so many more.
Yeah, we need to talk about Simon Fuller for a hot second because I went down the rabbit hole with him and was shooketh. His career is pretty incredible. Besides managing the artists that Kelsey already mentioned, he also has managed the likes of Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood. You see that Idol connection there. Steven Tyler, ABBA. He also discovered Amy Winehouse. He started the So You Think You Can Dance franchise.
Yeah, that,
right? Like, great. I mean, and then
the man
like,
loved a contest show.
Yeah, exactly right. And for a period of time, he was a director at CKX, which is a division of Sony, which gave him creative control over all of CKX's assets. And that included the Elvis Presley estate and Muhammad Ali's business interests.
What?
He owns significant stakes in both Posh and Beck's fashion lines. I didn't even know that Beck's had a fashion line, but apparently he did something with H&M. And he actually brokered David Beckham's astronomical LA Galaxy contract and Beckham's recent purchase of FC Miami.
Which is all covered in the documentary on Netflix, by the way.
Yes.
It's amazing.
And he's managed tennis star Andy Murray and F1 driver Lewis Hamilton. Like, the reach of this man's power and career and connections is pretty astronomical. Time has named Simon one of the 100 most influential people in the world. And he has been certified as the most successful British music manager of all time by Billboard. And I think that adds up. Does this man need his own episode? Honestly, maybe. But pivot over.
It's funny that I think of him as like the American Idol man when obviously he's known for so much more.
But he
really wasn't the businessman that he was until the Spice Girls. The Spice Girls are what brought him to that level. It's just so cool. It seems like they all came up together. And I'm so happy to hear that he's still working with Posh and David Beckham because it just goes to show that there's a lasting relationship there. And we love to hear it. Anywho, it is now June in 1996 and finally, the UK gets their first single, and frankly, the song of the century, if you ask me, Wannabe. If you wanna be my lover, you gotta get with my friends, make it last forever, friendship never ends. Oh, obviously, this song reached number one, but did you know that it reached number one on the charts of 37 countries?
Wow.
I mean, you all know the song. Like, what else can we say about Wannabe other than we freaking love it? So the US didn't get this song until January 1997. So the UK had a whole 6 months on us learning the lyrics and trying to figure out what zigzag ah means. So we got it to the top of the Billboard Hot 100 for 4 weeks. I'm proud of you, US. However, this is the group's only number one single in the US. Like, that doesn't track for me.
Oh, wow.
But all of the Spice Girls have writing credits on this song, which I love. And there are a few other gems that I uncovered. The first being that this song was recorded in less than an hour. I feel like I always read or hear in interviews that all our favorite songs came together really quick because, you know, it just clicks. But it took several editing sessions to get it right. The girls apparently went back and forth with like a more reggae or a more hip hop, more R&B inspired version. So while the song they knew was really good, it was, you know, the editing that they really couldn't nail down. And Victoria was the only girl who was not in the studio to write alongside the girls. She only appears in the backtracks. And while she was sharing inputs over the phone, I don't know where the heck she was. She has noted in like all of her memoirs. Every Spice Girl has a memoir, by the way, that she like really regrets that she wasn't there with the girls because this was obviously one of their most successful songs.
Plus, I wonder if she was with a boy or something. Like, I wish we had the tea on that.
I know. And everything I read, it wouldn't say where she was, just that she couldn't be there. So who knows? So the piano notes in the beginning, dun, 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 you know them. they were inspired by Grease, Summer Nights. You know that song in Grease?
The intro notes of that song, right?
Right. Love that. And another fun fact is that nobody knows what the hell Zig Zig Ah really means. So Mel C told Billboard Mag that it was just a funny, made up, silly word with no real meaning behind it. But Richard Stannard, hero, he was one of the writer's producers on the song, said, "None of us are ever going to tell anyone. It's something they all used to say about a certain something, and they said it all the time. So then I was like, oh, yeah, put it in." So this is one big inside joke, basically. Zig Zig Ah is code for something. I've seen a couple, you know, theories that don't really make that much sense to me, but this will go down in history as the biggest mystery of why. So a couple other fun facts. The record label bosses wanted to release Say You'll Be There or Love Thing as their debut single, but all five Spices stood their ground and insisted that it had to be Wannabe. So again, these girls, like, where did this confidence come from? I don't know, but I love it. And it just feels so endemic to their story, which is fitting because this song is so emblematic of their girl power philosophy. If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. This is chicks before dicks. Best ships are friendships, all rolled into one beautiful bubblegum pop bop. And obviously, this struck a chord with women everywhere. Wannabe was the best-selling single by a girl group, selling more than 7 million copies worldwide by the end of 1997. And I'm not done yet. I know you're like, stop talking, but I'll never stop talking about this. According to a 2014 study by the University of Amsterdam and Manchester's Museum of Science and Industry, Wannabe is the most recognizable pop song of the last 60 years, which, so like ever in history, pretty much. Participants in this project were able to identify this song in just 2.29 seconds because of Mel's laugh in the beginning. How amazing is that?
That's so cool. And that's such a good point. That's literally the start of the song. Do they knock? Is there a knock or no? Is it just footsteps?
I think it's just footsteps. She's okay. Running towards the microphone.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Now it's November 1996, and the UK gets the Spice Girls' first album, aptly named Spice. This is the most iconic cover. The original Spice cover where, you know, each girl is in the letter of Spice. Ugh, I'll just chef's kiss. I wore my t-shirt so much that it was illegible by the time my mom finally threw it out. And what's so cool about this album, aside from it being an effing banger, is that the Spice Girls are credited as writers in every single song. This is because they really valued solidarity, and in this spirit, they maintained parity in all aspects of being a group. That meant songwriting credits and royalties too, no matter which members contributed or did not contribute and how much. So like Posh, for example, she wasn't in the studio recording, you know, all of Wannabe, but she will see just as much as the other members of the group because they're really standing together and girl power.
At first, I was wondering if that's really unique, but I do think about like when we look at some like Backstreet Boys albums, for example, we'll see like certain boys on certain songs and not just like the group. But like when you look at the Spice Girls album and like at the credits and who wrote it, it'll say the Spice Girls. It won't say like everybody's name individually, like on many other albums.
And I think that's so powerful, especially for women, when in the media, at this time especially, everyone's looking for a catfight all the time, or women jealousy or girl-on-girl hate. It makes such an easy, sensational headline that they left no opportunity for that to be the case. It was them against the world. And I just, it's so inspiring to me. I'm like, I have a tear in my eye.
Oh, I love it.
Anyway, let's keep going before I get all too sappy. So this album gave us some other amazing bops as singles. First, we got Say You'll Be There. This was their second single, which was released in October of 1996. This was their second number one in the UK, and it went platinum. And then we got To Become One.
Love to you.
This was their third single and their second million selling single. We got this song in the US in July of 1997, and it peaked at number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100. It went gold. And I just want to say one more time, what the hell? So then after those two singles, we got Mama. And Who Do You Think You Are? These were released as a double A-side single, basically as like their fourth single. And it was their fourth consecutive number one single in the UK, making them the first act in UK chart history to have its first four singles reach number one. I mean, these girls were a hit from the second they started putting music out into the airwaves. I think Who Do You Think You Are is a freaking bop. I am personally in love with it, and I sing it in my head whenever somebody wrongs me. So, Mary, I'm dying to know, do you have any faves from this album?
I'm super basic. I mean, besides Wannabe, obviously, Say You'll Be There is a favorite for me, definitely.
First of all, there's no such thing as being basic and Spice Girls in the same sentence. So let's eradicate that from our vocabulary. That is a friggin' bop. It's amazing. So when I was little, I like skipped all the ballads on this album, but I feel like I have a new appreciation for them now that I'm a little older. And I can definitely hear the R&B influence in a bunch of these songs, especially like in If You Can't Dance. If you can't dance, if you can't dance, if you can't dance. And Last Time Lover. So I think it's important to talk about the impact that this first album had. Because as we mentioned, you know, from the very beginning, it was Spice Girls mania, couldn't go anywhere without seeing their imagery. So when this album came out, it was like the second coming of Beatlemania in the UK. In Europe and the US, the album was the biggest selling album of 1997. It was certified 8 times platinum in the UK and 7 times platinum in the US. And in total, Spice has sold 23 million copies worldwide, making it the biggest selling album by a girl group in music history and one of the most successful albums of all time. All time, period. Wow. No girl band qualifier here. So impressive. This is their first album. So one of my most vivid memories of their promotion from the album was when the girls performed at the 1997 Brit Awards. And Jerry is wearing that iconic Union Jack dress that so many have come to associate with her and the group. So according to the Daily Telegraph, this dress came in some online poll in 2010 that was like trying to find the 10 most iconic dresses of the past 50 years. And this one won, obviously, but it beat like Marilyn Monroe's white 7-year itch halter neck that's like flowing up. Like, what the hell? This was a black Gucci dress, a little Gucci dress, or a little Gucci dress. Jerry was going to be performing in this, and she was really worried that it was just like too boring because it was just like a black sort of like 1960s bathing suit. It has like that built-in underwear piece. That's why it's so freaking short. And Jerry allegedly decided that she wanted to celebrate being British. So she asked her sister to stitch this Union Jack tea towel that she found on the front of the dress as like a patriotic gesture. So what we're seeing isn't a Union Jack Gucci dress. What we're seeing is a black Gucci dress with a tea towel.
Oh my God.
Stitched on it. So in 1998, a year after Jerry performed in the dress, she auctioned it off for £41,000, which was a Guinness World Record for the most expensive piece of pop star clothing sold at auction. Obviously, the buyer was someone on behalf of Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas, so it can be on display and enjoyed by all the customers there. But what I thought was so cool is that Jerry donated the proceeds of the sale to a children's cancer charity. So it's also worth noting, I think, the Spice Girls' contribution to just this exciting time of patriotism in the UK that a lot of people refer to as Cool Britannia movement. So this was basically just the term that people used to describe the increased pride in UK culture throughout the mid-90s. And a lot of it was sort of a return to the swinging London 1960s pop culture, like Austin Powers, you know, everyone wanted to be British. And the Britpop movement was just the vibe and sort of helping lead the way there.
I love that vibe. And like many artists that we've talked about on this podcast, once you have a first album like that, there is a lot of pressure, anticipation, and expectations of how are you going to top yourself? How are you going to do better the next time around? And they really hit hard with their next album. And that was what we got from them in November of 1997, Spice World. And I just realized reading my notes on this that we're almost at the 26th anniversary of this album's release. Like,
I'm throwing a party. You're all invited.
Kelsey's throwing a party. I'm like crying about the age, and that's how we're going to be celebrating. Two different ends of the spectrum. So.
Hey, Mary, if we're 1 year older, it means we have one more year of listening to Spice Girls ahead of us. So it doesn't matter.
Okay. That's a great outlook. But unsurprising to no one, Spice World was also a huge success. It debuted at number one in the UK with first week sales of 190,000 copies. It set a new record for the fastest selling album when it shipped 7 million copies over the course of 2 weeks. It also reached number one, not just in the UK, but 13 other countries. The album debuted at number eight on the US Billboard 200 with I know, with first week sales of 83,000 copies, but week by week, sales started to go up. They were increasing. And then the album finally peaked at number three in the United States by February 14th, Happy V-Day, 1998. And then get this, when it peaked at number three, Spice also returned to the top 10 in the United States that week, making the Spice Girls the first British group to have two albums in the top 10 of the Billboard 200 at the same time since the Rolling Stones in the 1970s. Like, okay, slay queens.
Girl power.
Kelsey mentioned this earlier, and something that I learned in my research, which gave me an added respect for the Spice Girls, was that they, again, are listed as a collective, not individually, but as a collective, as writers on every single track on this album, which is just impressive.
I know. I feel like people do not give them enough credit, as we often see with like pop groups, like Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, you name it, Britney. Like, no one wants to give them credit for being as involved as they are just because they're so commercially successful too. So the Spice Girls were so involved in the writing aspect, and everything I read, and I'm sure you did too, is that they care about, you know, what their music sounds like. I love it.
Let's talk about the album a little bit more. So it had four singles, all of which were, you know, big deals. The lead single was Spice Up Your Life, which was obviously internationally huge. Spice Up Your Life peaked at number 18 in the United States, and of course it peaked at number one in the UK, and it became the girls' fifth consecutive chart topper in the UK and was certified platinum. So they're on a roll. They're not slowing down. The next single was Too Much. Too much of something is bad enough, but something's coming over me to make me wonder. This was a pop ballad. It had some R&B and doo-wop sounds. It also peaked at number one in the UK and went platinum. So again, another success right there. In the United States, Too Much peaked at number nine on the Billboard charts, which, I mean, still, it's like top 10.
It's not high enough.
offensive to some of us, so I understand. But get this. This was kind of sad. This was their fourth, as of now, their last top 10 single in the United States.
Honestly, US, you need to stop right now.
Speaking of stop, let's move on to the next single from the album, which is Stop. Stop. Thank you very much. I need somebody with a human touch. And that's an up-tempo kind of dance pop sound. It has Motown influences. Stop is definitely a song for the ladies. The girls apparently wrote it because they were feeling super like overworked and run down by management. And so they put those feelings into song. And I kind of love it. Stop peaked at number 2 in the UK. And this ended the girls' streak of consecutive number 1 singles on the UK chart. But that's a pretty freaking impressive streak, no matter how you look at it. 6 consecutive number 1 singles, like, holy cow. Stop reached the top 10 in 9 other countries. And then we got their final single off the album, Viva Forever. Viva Forever. This is obviously brings on the Latin vibes. And this was their 4th and final single from the album. They got another number 1 on the UK charts with this one. So they went right back up again. But unfortunately, this did not get released as a single in the United States. I also read that the original plan for this 4th single was to have a double A-side release, which I guess, is this a British thing? Like, I've never seen this before.
I have no idea either. I feel like it's just another way to get more music out there. But yeah, also back then, it's like they were selling physical CD singles. So, or like, it was like tapes.
Oh my
like,
God.
This was back in tape land.
Oh my God.
Because that's so, what like B-side refers to, right? Like you have one on one side, then you flip it and then there's more. Because I remember my NSYNC tape, I had to flip it.
So that's what we mean by these double A-side release. It's like the flip of the tape. But instead of Viva Forever, they were going to do a double A-side release of Never Give Up on the Good Times and Viva Forever. However, due to Jerry's departure from the group, that plan was scrapped. We're going to get into that a little bit more later. Kels, I know you were Spice Girls queen back in the day. You need to tell me, which was your favorite single and what was your favorite non-single?
Honestly, my blood is boiling right now because I was a Stop girly. So the fact that that's the song that like broke their streak, like I don't understand it. I memorized the choreo. It's just so fun. Read the signs. So, you know, just where we're going. Like they taught us practical knowledge and life advice in this song. But so many of these songs were in Spice World, the movie, which I know we're going to talk about in a little bit. But anytime I hear any one of these, like I just see the scenes of the movie playing in my head. Huge fan of Never Give Up on the Good Times. Never give up on the good times. Gotta believe in the love. Never give it up. No, never give it up. This was in my AIM profile for forever. Living It Up is a state of mind. I just love that sentiment. Look on the bright side of life. Those are my favorite as a kid. But listening as an adult, I really feel like Move Over is underrated. Move over, yeah. I feel like it was so ahead of its time. It's like rock pop. They're like Generation X. It's like a call to action for their generation. And I feel like this is the kind of thing that like Hillary Duff would have sang if this song came around in the early 2000s.
I love it.
I'm also a theater geek. So Lady is a Vamp is like, obviously love it because it sounds like it belongs in a musical. Cause the lady is a vamp. She's a vixen, not a champ.
She's a da, 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 da. Well, I am a basic bitch, and I'm sorry. I need to stop saying basic in the same sentence as Spice Girls. You're right.
It's illegal.
Again, I am someone that is learning more about her Spice Girls journey as she's getting older and revisiting it. I just didn't have the exposure when I was younger, but like I like would ride hard for Spice Up Your Life when
hell
I was
yeah.
young. Color to the world, Spice Up Your Life. I mean, how could nobody not like that? I just felt like this was like an international melting pot in a song too. There was all these different cultural influences and sounds. And turns out it wasn't just me making up things. The lyrics to Spice Up Your Life were intentionally like an international rally cry, definitely targeted at the global market. Mel C described it in an interview as how they always wanted to do a carnival tune and write a song for the world, which honestly, I think they succeeded at that. So this album came out, it took the world by storm. And throughout this year, this 1997 year when the album came out, the Spice Girls received so much media attention. And that included some controversies. For example, the girls performed live for the first time for the British royal family in 97. And at the show, they actually breached royal protocol when Mel and Jerry planted kisses on Prince Charles' cheeks and pinched his bottom.
Like, this is why I love them so much. Like, nothing was off limits, but it was playful and in the spirit of fun. People would be like, oh my God, those Spice Girls, they're crazy. But they weren't doing anything to hurt anyone. And their message was just having fun wherever you are, no matter what you're doing.
I can only imagine, like, the pearl clutchers when that happened. And that wasn't it. Apparently, they were also criticized in United States media for releasing their second album, Spice World, just 9 months after their American release of their debut album, Spice. And it's like, oh my God, who cares? We should be grateful. We haven't gotten an NSYNC album for 20 years, but like, if the Spice Girls want to give us two albums in a year, like, God bless them.
Seriously, just be grateful for what you have.
That kind of went hand in hand with other criticism they received, this kind of like oversaturation of the Spice Girls. They apparently signed 20 sponsorship deals during this time. So they were criticized for that. And it's like, what? Your girls can't make a coin, can't make a bag? Like, grow up.
There's this ad that's come back that's like, five, it's a power of five. It's promoting a TV station. And they like wrote a song for it. And it's so cheesy, but they are so into it. Like, they know what they're doing is cheesy and it's camp, but they sell it. And I feel like maybe this is what provided some of that inspiration for Josie and the Pussycats, which we talked about a couple episodes ago. There's that group.
Du jour.
And they're like making fun of them because they are just like promoting all these brands and labels. But I feel like this might have been like a little bit of a dig at the Spice Girls.
Now that you say that, it definitely would be in tune with the kind of the criticism they were getting at the time.
They also had lollipops that were branded.
Oh, my God.
I had them. And they were like the only lollipop that I would ever want to eat. And I saw them at 90s Con. You probably saw me freak the frick out on these little Spice Girls branded lollipops.
Did you get them?
I didn't, because they were $40 a lollipop.
Oh my God.
They had all the different Spice Girls on each one. So I saved all the Jerry ones for last. So yeah, they literally were on everything. And I'm pretty sure my household purchased one of everything.
That's so funny. So also during 1997, when all of this is going on, the girls also made the decision to fire their manager that we went on a little tangent about earlier, Simon Fuller. And that was definitely front page news around the world. Now, this story is tea. So on November 7th, 1997, the Spice Girls performed Spice Up Your Life at the MTV Europe Music Awards and won the Best Group Award. But get this, behind the scenes, the morning of the performance, they fired Simon and just began managing themselves to ensure a smooth transition. And Kelsey, again, this reminds me of your story you told us earlier about when they fired their first management team. So to ensure this smooth transition, Jerry allegedly stole a cell phone from Simon's assistant that contained the group's schedule and all of Simon's business contacts, so they could kind of continue this transition smoothly. And this came as like a shock. Many people credited Simon as the mastermind behind the group, the guy that kind of held them all together, and that this move was a bad move for the girls and that they had kind of lost their direction. So this was all going on at basically the same time. And nevertheless, they persisted because the Spice Girls remained the best-selling pop group of both 1997 and 98. So with Simon and without Simon.
Not to take anything away from Simon Fuller, because I'm sure that he was instrumental in their career, but like, how typical of everyone to credit women's success to a man.
This was the era of that. So disappointing, but unsurprising for 1997.
Disappointing, but unsurprising. I like that.
So as we all know, during the recording and writing of Spice World, the girls were also filming Spice World, the movie, a musical comedy starring the Spice Girls themselves. The album worked as the soundtrack to the film, with most of the songs from the album actually appearing in the film, with the exception of Move Over. Not sure why that one didn't make the cut. However, again, in theme with the song Stop, there's some background here that no songs had been written at the time that filming had begun. So the girls had to do all this songwriting and recording all at the same time as they were filming the movie. So it was just a grueling schedule, left them completely exhausted. And now maybe we have a better understanding for the inspiration and reason for the song Stop.
I didn't know that, but it makes sense because I did read something where they were saying like we had to write while choreographing and recording and doing everything simultaneously. And I was like, what are you doing so simultaneously? Like, take a break, you know, stop right now. But okay, now it makes sense.
Yeah, they were being worked. That's for sure. A little refresher on the plot of Spice World is apparently made in similar vein to the Beatles' A Hard Day's Night. I've never seen that, but I trust this description. But the movie depicts a series of fictional events leading up to a major concert at London's Royal Albert Hall. The movie's interspersed with dream sequences and flashbacks, as well as surreal moments and humorous asides. There's also a subplot dealing with this like smear campaign against the Spice Girls by an overzealous newspaper CEO, an attempt to destroy their reputation for his own benefit. Did I miss any key plot points, Kels?
Well, there's aliens also.
There's aliens.
It's just crazy when you list off all the elements that this movie has. Like, there's aliens, there's a boat chase, there's a boat rescue. I mean, it's all meant to be like camp. Like, we can all agree that this movie wasn't meant to be like a cinematic masterpiece. But there's this one scene where like one of the London bridges is like being pulled up and they take their giant, amazing Union Jack tour bus like over the gap, and it cuts to like clearly a toy version of the bus going over the bridge, flying in the air. It's just, it's camp perfection. If you ask me what the movie was about, I honestly don't know what I would tell you. Just them having fun.
What do you need more than that, right? I think the rest of the public felt pretty similar to you, Kels, because this movie was a number one box office hit in the UK, grossing £2.3 million during its opening weekend on Boxing Day in 1997. Also in the United States, Spice World was a huge success as well and broke the record for the highest ever weekend debut for a Super Bowl weekend with box office sales of $10.5 million for that first weekend. So instead of watching the Super Bowl, everybody was watching Spice World.
As they should be.
The film grossed $56 million at the worldwide box office and, shocking to everybody, received primarily negative reviews from the critics. But as we always say, fuck the critics. And I think now looking back, this movie, again, like so many movies we talk about, just have so much more of an appreciation and are cult classics. Do you have any like favorite parts you want to shout out, Kels? I know this was like a huge movie for you back in the day.
Like the entire movie is so amazing. But yeah, looking back, it does offer an interesting commentary on the tabloid culture at the time. Basically, there's this really sketchy paparazzi that follows the girls everywhere. And there's this one scene, you know, while they're getting ready for their big concert, they're just living their lives, being themselves. And everything they say is taken out of context and, you know, splashed across the papers. And their manager gets mad at them because he's trying to like control them. So it feels like there may have been a little bit of... you know, art imitating life, if you will. I thought it was autobiographical when I was little. I thought it was real until the alien showed up. And then I was like, wait, is this fake? Because like, I don't get it. But there's this one scene where they're at this like boot camp, like learning all their choreography. Baby is wearing the most amazing sneakers that I've ever seen in my life. Visually, there were so many moments from this movie that stick in my mind. One of them being there's this scene where they all camp outside because they all want to sleep together because they hear scary things in the castle that they're staying at. Everything I say, I'm like, wow, this sounds unhinged, because it is, but in the best way. And every Spice Girl has like their own color that correlates to their own canopy. Every sneaker that Baby ever wore is like the most iconic thing I've ever seen. Those super big platform sneakers. There's this other scene where Jerry is asked a question about like the Spice Girls, and she just says, "Is the Pope a Catholic?
Come on, is the Pope a Catholic?"
And then that turned into like a big headline the next day of like Spice Girls question legitimacy of Pope. And I would say that line all the time as a child, like not knowing what it meant. Is the Pope a Catholic? Like I had no freaking idea, but I still say it to this day. But I think my favorite moment of all is when they have these two young fans join them on their tour bus. These girls had just won a contest to hang out with the Spice Girls. And the Spice Girls are like, this is so boring. Like, we're not just going to sit here in our tour bus. Like, we want to have fun with you. So they decide to escape and go on this little boat. And Scary Spice is giving them directions to run and get off the tour bus. And she says, when I say go, we go. Go.
When I say go, we go. Go!
My best friend Steffi and I, we watch this scene over and over. We still say this to each other. So we will keep the tradition of Spice World alive through these choice quotes.
Oh, I love it. So on top of that, to promote the Spice World album, the movie, the music, everything they had going on, the girls embarked on their debut headlining concert tour titled the Spice World Tour. They went from Europe to North America. There was a total of 97 dates between February and September of 1998. They estimated the girls performed in front of approximately 2.1 million fans. And it remains the highest grossing tour ever by a female group. Apparently, in New York City, the girls set the record for the quickest ever sellout, selling 13,000 tickets for Madison Square Garden in less than 12 minutes. Whoa.
Do you know how people got tickets back then? Like, did they have to wait outside?
I think you had to, like, go to a box office.
So, like, people are, like, sleeping outside.
Or maybe you could call the ticket office. Maybe.
None of this Ticketmaster bullshit. Yeah. Verified fan my ass. Ugh.
I mean, Kelsey, you went to this tour, right? I have a memory that you did. Tell me everything.
It was July 3rd, 1998, Hartford. I can still smell the fresh paint. Obviously, you get that reference because it's Titanic. So this was my first concert that I like vividly remember. And I'm pretty sure that I just stood there with my mouth open the entire time. But I remember also as excited as I was to finally see the Spice Girls, who I was obsessed with. After two albums, like it was weird that they didn't go on a tour after their first album. I was really sad because Jerry had left a month before my tour date on May 31st. So I was like really excited to see them, obviously. And I had the best time ever. My mom will die if she hears that I didn't have the best time ever. I don't know. I don't know what she did to get those tickets, if she slept on the ground or called right at the moment, but she did the Lord's work taking her two daughters to Spice Girls. But I remember being like, how could Jerry not be here? Like, how could she leave her fans on their first tour? Like, this was our only chance to see them. And she left us high and dry. And I was really pissed because I was seven and I didn't really know, like, why she could have left. So I think this is a good segue to talk about Jerry's departure and the rumors. So it all started when Jerry missed a big TV appearance in the UK and two concerts. I think it was in like the Netherlands, somewhere in Europe. And we finally got confirmation that Jerry was leaving the Spice Girls. Jerry said she left the band because of creative differences. This was her official statement. Sadly, I would like to confirm that I have left the Spice Girls. This is because of differences between us. I'm sure the group will continue to be successful, and I wish them all the best. P.S. I'll be back. Interesting. But, like, Jerry, they had 40 concert dates left in the United States, including Old Hartford, Connecticut, New England's rising star, plus a charity concert in Rome and four more dates in Britain. So she really left them high and dry. Whatever the problem was, she felt that she couldn't soldier on and finish this humongous tour. So as I mentioned earlier, pretty much every Spice Girl has a memoir, and they've all written about this moment, as you can imagine. So in Jerry's memoir, she acknowledged that her departure was sudden and the timing was far from ideal. She also said that it wasn't just one thing that made her leave the group, but that the girls were squabbling, and she really wanted to like own her role in like some of the unease that was happening. Okay. And she really wanted to go on her own and have a solo career. So she went on to release three albums as a solo artist. She wrote about a lot of the pressure, you know, the invasion of privacy was just too much. There was a lot of stress. She had an eating disorder that allegedly, you know, was coming back, and just she was not in a good place mentally. She needed to leave for her mental health was basically my takeaway from all of this. And she apparently told the group in early 1998 that she wanted their September show at Wembley Stadium to be their last, but no one agreed. So she was like, fine, then I'm just going to have to get up and pack my bags and like leave in the middle of the night, basically. So that was the rationale that we were given, just that Jerry was struggling mentally, emotionally. She didn't want to do it anymore. She wanted to go do her own thing. But very recently, in 2019, Mel B, Scary Spice, offered some new perspective around Jerry's departure that really fed the flames. She said that she and Jerry had a sexual encounter at one point during the Spice Girls' early days. So Mel B said on Piers Morgan's Life Stories, that's the show it was, she said, she's going to hate me for this because she's all posh in her country house and her husband, but it's a fact. It just happened and we just giggled at it and that was it. It just happened one time and then you talk about it and it doesn't really happen again. It was just that one time. So this happens in 2019. Jerry's rep immediately denied it and was like, what the hell? And also, it's Mother's Day. Like, why are you doing this, Mel B? And I think Mel B sort of has this reputation now. She's been like a TV host and she's a judge on like X Factor or one of those like America's Got Talent type shows. A Simon Fuller show, I'm sure.
Yes.
She's pretty known for being like outspoken. So I think everyone is just like, why are you, you know, bringing this up now in 2019? And like, are you like outing your friend if that was the case? Yeah. She's clearly not comfortable with it. What's interesting is Mel B's book, she references a long-term relationship with a woman. And she's talked about her own sexuality really openly. She herself describes herself as fluid, but she had this really high-profile relationship with Eddie Murphy, which is kind of like, I didn't know they dated. No. I know, right? It's like icons coming together. So she said that before she started dating Eddie Murphy, she'd come out of a beautiful, loving 5-year relationship with a woman, one that I will never, ever discuss because she was extremely private and I will always respect that. So the plot thickens. There is this TikToker. Her name is Sapphic Underground. She went super viral for exploring this potential relationship between Mel B and Jerry. So all credit for this theory goes to Sapphic Underground. She thinks that they started out as like a friends with benefits situation, but it quickly developed into something more. But when that relationship broke down, that Ginger was so heartbroken that that's why she left the Spice Girls. And it was pretty much timed around Mel B's birthday. And it was also right before Mel B got engaged. This TikToker references an interview with Mel B's ex-husband. Mel B's been married twice. He mentioned that Mel had this really deep connection with Jerry in a way that this TikToker seems to believe is a euphemism for something else. Like they weren't just roommates, you know?
Right.
Like, so this TikToker also says that in Jerry's memoir, she says that she left the band because of a relationship breakdown. So here we see sort of the narrative start to change, right? Mm-hmm. We were told that it was a mental overload. She wanted to go do her own thing. But this 2002 memoir sheds a new light on it. And in Jerry's book, she said that she decided, I have loved and lost. I give up. My heart is breaking. That's the pull quote that a lot of people are sort of latching onto and saying, okay, well, who was this relationship with? That was so bad that you had to leave with 40 tour dates left and a very sad little girl named Kelsey in Hartford, Connecticut. Well, she goes on to dissect the lyrics in Viva Forever, which was mainly written by Jerry. And this was also the final single that the Spice Girls all released, you know, as a group. And this TikToker thinks that these lyrics really point to a secret romance. There's no male pronouns in there. It's all about keeping a secret and how everything is safe with me and kept away from the tabloids. So shortly after Viva Forever was released, Mel B got engaged to the husband who did that interview, who said that there was like a very deep connection between Jerry and Mel B. And shortly after that, around Mel B's birthday, that's when she left. So this TikToker thinks that the engagement was like the straw that broke the camel's back with Jerry, and she was just really heartbroken. And she claims, this TikToker, that Jerry has likened her response to Mel B's engagement to a child throwing a temper tantrum. And then she left the band right away around Mel B's birthday. So clearly there was something going on in the group that maybe or maybe not Mel B's engagement was the catalyst to that unrest or disagreement or fight or whatever. So that's one theory. You know, whether it's true or not, my two cents is it's none of our business.
But yes,
I do think it's really shitty of Mel B to like out Jerry like that, even if it was just a, you know, a harmless fling and it was like a one-time thing. I don't know. I feel like that's shitty to do to someone who was your best friend at the time.
I completely agree. I love a little juicy nugget gossip that we can get here and there, but I totally agree. This reminds me of like a lot of the Taylor Swift theories I hear. That's all I'm going to say. It's all very interesting.
So after Jerry leaves, we get the first single from the Spice Girls, sans Ginger Spice. And this single was aptly named Goodbye. Goodbye. But it might surprise you to learn that this song wasn't originally written about Jerry. It was written by all of them before she left. But in July, that fateful July, during their world tour, after Jerry left, they decided to rework the song because it had now taken on a new meaning. So the Spice Girls were also filming a documentary at this time, you know, because why the hell not? They're doing everything else, so might as well. And they apparently caught footage of the recording process of this song. And there's a scene where Mel B is recording her part and she gets so emotional, she takes off her headphones and has to walk out of the studio because it's about Jerry and it was really hard for her to record. So it just goes to show that their friendship was really deep and this was a really obviously emotionally charged time for all of them. So December 1998, Goodbye becomes the Spice Girls' eighth number one single in the UK. And with that, they became the first act to have three consecutive Christmas number one singles since the Beatles in 1965. So still breaking records over here, even sans Jerry. You know, maybe people were curious to see, you know, how their sound may change without one of the leaders of the group. And the lyrics were seen by everyone, sort of like this was the Spice Girls saying goodbye to their fans and them as a group. All the remaining Spice Girls were like, absolutely not. We are still a group. Viva forever. And Emma Bunton has since said that there were plans to do a Spice World movie sequel, but that it wasn't in the cards after Jerry left. I mean, that's like heartbreaking for me.
I'm so sorry that you had to learn that. I'm so sorry.
I don't know where they could have gone, though, because as I mentioned, like there's literally no stone they left unturned in that first movie.
I mean, there's room for anything, right? In the Spice universe. World universe,
yes. It'd be called Spice Universe.
Yeah, they need to expand, make it a little bigger. But you had mentioned that Mel B had just gotten engaged and was going to get married, and it was right after that late 1998 release of Goodbye that she actually gave birth to her daughter, Phoenix. And in February of 99, Posh gave birth to Brooklyn, her first son, in March. Her and David had their massive, insane wedding later in 1999, and we discussed that more in detail in our VH1 Fabulous Life episode.
The documentary Beckham has some amazing photos and footage from it. So it's worth watching, honestly, just for that. I think it happens in the third or fourth episode. I like did not remember how hot he was.
He was so hot. Oh my God. Like, he was a piece. Woo! But so
Posh.
They're getting married, they're having babies, they're leaving the group, a lot's going on. And also in 1999, they all decided to pursue solo careers. So they were all doing kind of their own thing for a period of time there. However, don't worry, they returned to the studio in August of 1999 after an 8-month recording break as a group, but still without Jerry. And this new album that they were working on, it was initially more pop influenced, very similar to their first two albums. However, the sound took a more mature and different direction when they brought in some American producers, including the likes of Rodney Jerkins, and he came on board to collaborate with the group. And you can hear Rodney's kind of signature sound and his production prowess on Deja Vu by Beyonce, Lose My Breath by Destiny's Child, Celebrity, NSYNC, Shining Star, Backstreet Boys, Telephone, Lady Gaga. He has a vibe. I know it when I hear it. That's Rodney Jerkins. So he came over to work with the girls. So from that, Forever, their third studio album was released in November of 2000. Their one album without Jerry, and it peaked at number 2 on the UK chart and was certified platinum in the UK. Worldwide, the album has sold over 4 million copies. And unfortunately and annoyingly, obviously, this is only a fraction of what Spice and Spice World sold. But like you were kind of saying, I think there's this uncertainty, maybe almost like distrust from the public that it's going to be as good. Like when you lose a member, like, oh, they're like, they're in shambles. They can't put out what they used to put out. Like it's not the same anymore. And it definitely has the potential of being a kiss of death, I think, for some groups. And I just want to thank my lucky stars that didn't happen when Kevin left Backstreet Boys.
Oh my God. You're so right though. So like I got like meet and greet tickets for Backstreet Boys when Kevin left the group on hiatus. And I still felt like it didn't count, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's just not the same. So when people are like, oh, have you seen Spice Girls? I'm like, kind of. Because it's not the same experience. So I personally really fell off the Spice Girls train. Not that I didn't love them anymore. I just also was really distracted by Backstreet Boys. I didn't have room for both. But
yes.
I also think that the sound was just a little bit more mature because I was still super young in 2000 and like clinging on to the bubblegum pop.
Rodney Jerkins definitely has a much more mature sound. That would totally track. And the album only had one single, but it was one of those double A side, two side singles. And those were Holler. And Let Love Lead the Way. Just keep the faith and let love lead the way. But this H-side single went on to debut at number 1 on the UK charts, and it was the group's 9th number 1 single. They tied with ABBA as the group with the most singles to reach the top of the charts, only behind the Beatles, Elvis Presley, Cliff Richard, and Madonna overall. So pretty incredible record, truly amongst the greats. So some background on how this album came to be. During the Spice World tour, the original plan was to write and record songs for their third album and also a live album. Ugh, by the way, I love live albums. Like I need all of our artists to release their live albums. It doesn't take any extra work. Just like release it. But anyway, however, the original concept for Forever was to do a showcase of solo songs. So each girl could have their own like solo track. And they could do some duets with one another, cover songs featuring all 5 of the girls. And this was meant to promote the idea that the Spice Girls were all individuals, yet they could come together as one. And they went in and started working with some of their longtime collaborators, Richard Stannard and Matt Rowe, to create this new album. But then, as Kelsey mentioned, Jerry leaving just totally threw a wrench into this plan. And many of the already produced songs were scrapped. The live album was canceled. And because, like, I mean, the message was basically contradicted by Jerry's departure, they had to take a totally different direction. The Spice Girls only had really one major performance of their single at the 2000 MTV Europe Music Awards. After that, they basically ceased all promotional activities in December of 2000. Just a month after the album's release. So they really did not do any promo at all. And they began this indefinite hiatus to concentrate on their solo careers. They insisted, however, that the group was not splitting up. Kelsey, were you paying attention to this? Did you believe what they were saying? Or were you in Backstreet Boys land?
I was in Backstreet Boys land, but no, I was really sad. It just felt to me like they were everywhere. They were everywhere. They were everywhere. And then poof.
Yeah.
It was such a blip on the radar. But the impact that they had, it's just amazing that they were able to do what they did with the short time that they had together.
I know, like they really hit hard fast, but they went on this hiatus in 2000 and 7 long years went by. But on June 28th, 2007, the Spice Girls, including Jerry, held a press conference at the O2 Arena, revealing their intention to reunite for a worldwide tour. The Return of the Spice Girls. Each girl of the group was reportedly paid £10 million, $20 million to do this reunion tour. A huge chunk of change. Tickets for the first London date of the Return of the Spice Girls tour sold out in 38 seconds. Like, this was Ticketmaster drama in real life, pre-Ticketmaster. Like, holy shit. It was reported that over 1 million people signed up in the UK alone, and 5 million worldwide for this ticket ballot on the website. There were 16 additional dates in London that were added. They all sold out in 1 minute. 16.
16.
16.
Not like, and, oh, I'll add another show. 16. That's insane.
So in total, they did 17 because they added the 16 as additional. So there was 17 nights in London at the O2 Arena, all sold out, which is just, you know, mind-blowing. They also added more shows in the United States. They were all sold out. The tour opened on December 2nd, 2007 in Vancouver. The Spice Girls performed to an audience of 15,000 people. They sang 20 songs, changed outfits a total of 8 times, the whole kit and caboodle. Kels, I don't think you went to this one, but do you remember when you heard the news of the reunion tour? Were you like itching to go?
Yeah. Yeah. I did not go. I was in high school and my parents were like, get a job. You're not flying to London for a Spice Girls concert. I remember seeing photos of their outfits and it was all like self-referencing and homage. Like Jerry had, you know, this bedazzled Union Jack dress. It was just perfection.
Everybody ate it up. The tour was a massive success. It was the highest grossing concert of 2007 and 2008. It earned $107.2 million in ticket sales and merchandising with sponsorship and ad deals, bringing the total to over $200 million.
I just don't think that we as Americans will ever understand how truly influential they were in the UK. Like, they spurred the economy and made being British cool. I feel like the Brits showing up for the Spice Girls was like a patriotic thing to do.
Like a required reading almost. Yes. Like required attendance.
I know that like Adele is a huge fan. I feel like there's so many celebrities who are big fans of Spice Girls too. Do you remember that story? Sorry, this is a weird tangent, but was it Selena Gomez who took a photo with someone at a Spice Girls concert and the girl ended up being Blake Lively?
It's just a girl. It's not someone famous. It's someone named Bria Madrid.
Oh,
and she thought
it.
She was doing it with Baby Spice, but it was Blake Lively. Ah, that's hilarious.
Oh, so it was Blake, but the girl is not famous.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
I also thought this was super cool. In 2012, the Spice Girls reconnected with their former manager, Simon Fuller, and they developed a stage musical called Viva Forever, similar to ABBA's Mamma Mia, which we all love and have seen a million times. It used the girls' music to create this like original story. And in June of 2012, to promote this musical, the girls reunited for a press conference at the St. Pancras Renaissance London Hotel, where apparently the music video for Wannabe had been filmed exactly 16 years earlier. Like, what an iconic moment. Basically back where it all began and having like their very own ABBA Mamma Mia moment. That was probably such a fun musical. I think it only was shown in the UK.
I don't think it was a big success.
So what? I mean, fuck the critics.
Right. It just amazes me that they were a group for like 4 years and already they have like all these iconic places, like that staircase in the Wannabe music video. I would know that staircase anywhere. It's just so cool that, again, in such a short period of time, they made such a huge impact.
So impactful. So that was 2012. In 2018, the girls officially announced their second reunion tour. They also revealed that they would do it as a foursome, and this time it would be without Victoria or Posh Spice. She was in the fashion industry then, and she had other commitments and could not commit to the tour. So each of the other girls were reportedly paid £12 million to do this reunion tour. Kelsey, what was the tenor in the fandom that they were going to go on without Victoria?
I mean, I wasn't like in a fan group or like in a chat group or anything, but I feel like at least I was like, why can't we get all five? Like, I had adult money to go. It wasn't worth it to me to go without all five. I just know that it's not the same. So whoever got to see that 2007-2008 tour, those memories are worth their weight in gold.
And even just as a foursome, they went on this 2019 tour, and it was only in the UK and Ireland, and it was only 13 dates. So relatively small in comparison to, you know, the 97 date one that they went on, but it had 700,000 spectators that attended, earned over $78 million in ticket sales. Apparently there were some like sound problems, audio issues. We know audio issues, let me tell you guys, but apparently there were some audio issues in some of the concerts, but Anna Nicholson from The Guardian, who attended the concert, wrote, quote, "As nostalgia tours go, this could hardly have been bettered," end quote. And just a perfect quote to describe that and the feeling that we are honestly looking for on this podcast. Nostalgia.
You're so right, Mary. It's like a warm hug. Mm. So as I've said 18,000 times, I mean, for only being around for a few years and for having their first world tour ending and losing a member, it really is just incredible that the Spice Girls have made such a lasting impact on culture. And just to wrap it up, it's hard for me to put into words what they mean to me as an individual, but I think Rolling Stone did a good job because in 2018, they named the Spice Girls Girl Power Ethos as one of the top millennial 100, which is a list of 100 people, music, cultural touchstones, and movements that have shaped the millennial generation. And I feel like if you're in a room with millennials, the best conversation starter you can do is play a Spice Girls song and everyone will know all the words. I mean, they paved the way for the pop music movement that we all love. And I think they really made a beautiful entryway for the Y2K bubblegum pop music that we love. And they've inspired acts like Bewitched, Pussycat Dolls, Blackpink. The list goes on and on. So that's what we have to say about the Spice Girls today. Who knows? Maybe we'll do a listen of one of their albums. Ooh. And go a little deeper track by track. But this was just a really fun revisit of one of my all-time favorite groups. So thanks, Mary, for talking about Spice Girls with me.
Yes, I'm so glad we could do this. I learned so much, and I hope, you know, the listeners did as well. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. We continue Brittober next week with a special guest and Girl Power, Spice Girls, Britney. Like, what more could we ask for when the seasons are changing and it's getting dark early? Like, let's listen to our favorite girls and just soak in all the nostalgia.
Let's do it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at When They Popped Pod. And that's all we got. Have a great week.
Bye.
If you
want to
be my lover.